From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Monday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. Ole Miss falls to LSU 40-24. Bigger story, Lee, season-ending injury for Shea Patterson as a torn PCL that appeared to suffer late in the first half. We'll see if we get any more clarification on that. Went back in the game for most of the second half. Jordan Tamu had two possessions. That led to 11 points for the backup, who is now the starter, the transfer from New Mexico Military Institute against Arkansas this weekend. It is it is off the board currently because of quarterback situations at both schools. So we'll go through odds here in a little bit, but Ole Miss Arkansas will not be one of those, at least where I've looked this morning. It is not yet up for betting purposes. So Ole Miss and Arkansas, 11 a.m., from Vaught-Hemingway Stadium as the Rebels close out a three-game homestand. It's also the first time this past weekend that Ole Miss could have recruits on campus. You can look at that at rebelgrove.com. Good bit of content up, actually, at rebelgrove.com this morning. Neil's 10 thoughts. A lot of stuff from the game, including a little more of a profile of Jordan Tamu. I talked to his junior college coach, Joe Fortner, on Saturday night. That is up, as well as we talked to a physical therapist to discuss PCL injuries. You can read about that at rebelgrove.com if you're a subscriber. And then all of our post-game content. Also, yesterday, Russell had recruit reactions, and I spoke with Don Kessinger talking to about Mickey Callaway, the former Ole Miss baseball player, Cleveland Indians pitching coach, who will be announced as the New York Mets manager later today in a press conference in New York. So all that up at rebelgrove.com. And the podcast brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Hope that you all entered in for Free Gas Fridays. They'll do that again on Friday. Hope you went over to the Crystal and got 49-cent wings over the weekend. I'm sure that deal will be back as well. So check those things out. Get the lunch special. Get the ribs at night. And be ready, again, for Free Gas Fridays on Friday with the Oxford Exxon. And, again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. You call that number. You ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He sends you a quote. Within 15 minutes in business hours, it's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. It's a great deal. There's no haggling. And then it's up to you. You get your quote, and you can shop it around all day, all week, whatever you want to do. Or you can take our word for it. And if you don't want to take our word for it, you can take the word of so many of our podcast listeners from Cape Girardeau to Biloxi, from Shreveport to Atlanta, who have cashed in on the great deals at Clark Ford in Amory. And let Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience to make the deal even better. At the end of your deal, tell Corey, hey, I heard about the podcast. I mean, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Any of the three, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Little quick clarification on something on the Billy's Pecans on the board yesterday. The reason why it's such a good holiday gift to give people, especially for corporation or you've got clients, is you can fill out a spreadsheet and they'll ship it all to the separate people for you. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to get this shipment in, have tons of boxes in your house, and then worried about getting it out to your clients. You just tell them where all to send it. They take care of it and even will put your company logo on the box if you so desire when they head it out to the world. So
Stacy Crenshaw, who's one of the owners, I guess the owner of Billy's Pecans, and I mean this as a compliment, is the single most organized person I think I've ever encountered. Efficient. She's really sharp. I one day hope to be half that efficient. If I ever get to half of that efficiency, I'm cruising.
So, Ole Miss loses 40-24. We talked about it with instant analysis presented by Clark Ford on the site on Saturday night. We've got different content items to talk about it. It was a microcosm of what is going wrong for Ole Miss when things have gone wrong this season. Darius Geis rushes for 276 yards on 22 carries. He averaged 12.5 yards per carry. Orgeron just pulled him out later. He would have set the record for most rushing yards against Ole Miss, which was set by Leonard Fournette last season. Ole Miss offensively dropped at least one touchdown pass, had other drops. The wide receivers did not play well. They lost lots of one-on-one battles to LSU defensive backs, and then Shea Patterson played hurt most of the game. It was clear when he came off that he was limping. Something bothered him during a backpedal. He threw a ball that was, I guess, picked off, actually.
Yes.
And he was backpedaling. He goes in the tent. I'm going to take you through what we saw from our vantage point here. He goes in the little pop-up tent, and even just the fact that they put the tent up was part of the first level of, I guess, showing there was concern, because Jordan Wilkins had had an ankle injury right before that, and they did not. They just put him on the table, wrapped it up, sent him into the locker room, probably to get a more extensive wrap or whatever they did. And then he came back out, but the tent went up immediately. Sean Patterson Jr., the assistant coach, the brother of Shea Patterson, went into the tent pretty much immediately. Phil Longo went into the tent pretty quickly as well. And you could tell they were testing something. You could kind of see through this screened area between parts of the tent.
You probably shouldn't say this, because now they will go out and get a better tent, more comprehensive tent.
They had a small gap where you could kind of see through the screen. Yeah. And you could see that there was conversation going on. They were kind of down in Shea's ear a little bit. They were dropping him back on the table, picking him up, playing with it. Then he goes off the field, comes back in the second half, knee brace on, played. Could tell he was favoring it, and then there was a hit middle to late third quarter, I think, if I'm right in saying that.
I think that's correct.
Where he gets knocked down and, frankly, had a bit of a hard time getting back up.
Yes.
He gets back up. He was a gamer. And then he plays through until about 5 minutes left, when Tamu executed a scoring drive. They got a two-point conversion, led to the final score. But he was in pain. It was not a good night for Shea statistically. 10 of 23, 116 yards, no touchdowns, three interceptions. Again, hurt a little bit by wide receivers as well, but he did not throw the ball well either. It's going to be somewhat of an ACL-type recovery moving forward is the best guess as of right now, without knowing the grade of the injury.
So there's a lot here. I don't know how much of this matters, honestly. The first injury appeared to occur on a non-contact play.
It did.
I spoke yesterday to an orthopedic surgeon who I know fairly well. And he said it's conceivable that you could suffer a PCL tear on no contact, but that the overwhelming majority of PCL tears come as a result of a blunt force trauma to the front of the knee, and the tibia goes backward and tears the PCL. So it does beg the question that, was it possible that, because I'm going to keep this just perfectly real. I'm going to tell you where we heard something, and I'm going to tell you that we haven't confirmed it. We heard initially that he had suffered a sprained
ACL,
which means a sprain means tear. A torn ACL means a complete tear of the ACL.
Yeah, there's three grades of sprains. I mean, I'm so far from knowledgeable when it comes to medical situations, but I do know this.
We talk to people who are knowledgeable, and so therefore you can give a rudimentary explanation.
So there's three levels of grades or degrees of sprains. The first one is a really bad stretching or a very slight tear, grade one.
Yes.
There's still pretty much stability in the knee, but something is going wrong. There's been trauma, and there is some semblance of microscopic tears and stretching.
Yes.
Two is partial tears. It is instability in the knee, and then grade three is torn all the way through. So,
right.
Yes, I've heard a lot, and I tweeted this on Saturday night. Sprain is kind of considered, oh, well, not that bad, no big deal. And I get that, because a lot of times you can play through sprains depending on what the injury is. However, a sprain still is a tear, or at least a severe stretching of that ligament. Also, it's a ligament if it's a sprain. It's a strain if it's a muscle, by the way. Just another thing there.
My initial column that I started writing in the third quarter was one that really questioned the logic. This was before we found out that he had suffered a season-ending injury.
Yeah.
One that really questioned the logic of putting him back out there. And it's one where, and I understand why fans don't like this line of thinking. I'm not this is not a criticism of wanting a game. But I think it's apropos now as we go into the last weekend of October. It's time to take a real big picture approach. It's time to quit thinking about the small picture. It's time to stop losing the forest for the trees. Because if Shea Patterson went back in there with his knee not completely healthy, and that led in any part, and I'm saying if, that led in any part to a season-ending injury, it wasn't smart. I know the games are meaningful, but they're not. You're not playing for a championship. You're not playing for bowl eligibility. They're not meaningful. They're not meaningless, but they're not meaningful. The truth is, and I wrote this in 10 Thoughts, brought to you by Harry Alexander, harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. He'll take care of all of your residential and condo needs. They play five games. There's two things that are left for this program, this calendar year, that are significant, and none of them are those five games. There's an NCAA verdict, and there's the hire of a permanent replacement for Hugh Freeze. That's it. They're 3-4 right now.
They are, yeah.
Tell me the difference in posterity between 4-8 and 5-7. It's negligible at best. It doesn't matter, really. Is that fair? It doesn't really matter, except to the people who are playing the game. And I'm not being critical of that. I'm just, it's, for example, and I wrote this, I don't even, the whole, well, you got to start getting Alex Faneuil ready. No, you don't.
Jordan Tamu.
No, I'm saying it. Got to start getting Alex Faneuil ready in case Jordan Tamu gets hurt.
It would be Pellerin, wouldn't it?
I would guess.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
My point is, no, if you've redshirted a kid to this point, redshirt the kid.
I mean, obviously barring complete and utter catastrophe, but yeah.
I mean, you know, we're just going to be interesting with Tamu. I wrote about this too. Tamu, from what I've seen so far, really likes to use his feet.
Good runner.
I think you have to be really careful with how much you allow him to run.
But aren't you killing his game when you do that?
If he goes down for any
Jason, but you're kind of playing both sides against the middle there.
I would get conservative with Tamu. I really would. I'd get him through the season. I would personally.
What's the positive to that?
You get him through the season. You get through the season.
Well, okay, but again, what's the positive?
That's it.
I mean, if he. I
don't think the games are meaningful. It's just me. I don't.
But couldn't you play that both ways? Hey, run around like crazy and let's do some crazy stuff because what does it matter?
I guess that's true. You don't want to get into a situation where you're like, okay, well, now we're at Pellerin, and then if he gets hurt, that's just me. I didn't see the point in putting Patterson back in the game in the third quarter. I asked Matt Luke the question, and when he gave me the answer of, they told us that he couldn't get hurt worse, I scrapped the column.
Yeah. Because if that is true, that is a very valid thing, and it was hard to go against that.
And I'm not disputing at all that is indeed what Matt Luke was told.
Yeah, Matt Luke is not a doctor. He asks trainers what they think, and then he proceeds off of that answer.
That being said, I do think there is this – this is the problem with interim seasons. The interim coach is every single game is a job interview. Every single thing you do is a job interview. And for Matt Luke, this is his dream job. And I'm not questioning him at all. I do question what was, and I think it will be a question that was asked today, what was the thought process at halftime? Had it been a 21-point game at the half, would you have put him back in? Or was it about, we think we can win this game?
And his full quote was, it was both that night. He said, he gives us the best chance to win, and they said he couldn't hurt it any worse, if I remember correctly.
But when I saw him get out there on the field in the third quarter,
he was pretty ginger.
I didn't think he looked remotely healthy.
Now, there was a clear favoring of that right leg.
Yes.
Had an MRI after the game.
He was kind of throwing off his back foot a lot. He didn't feel comfortable on it. So his season's over, and I'll be interested. There's a number of things I'm kind of interested in. This is where I think we're, what, within 2 weeks from what we expect to be sort of an NCAA verdict? We don't expect it this week. There are some people that think it's coming next week. I kind of think it's coming the week after that. So today's the the 24th? I've lost track of all days.
Yeah.
24th. Within 3 weeks of a verdict. Then I think they can go out and conduct a coaching search for real. I mean, I think the coaching search is well underway, but I think then you can start to have real substantive conversations with representatives of potential candidates.
So, it is what it is. We'll find out more today. I would like to find out the degree of the injury for Shea. There's been talk that they might immobilize it, let it sit for a little while, and then see if it heals itself and what degree prior to surgery.
Well, I talked to a surgeon about that. He said that a lot of people operate basically without a PCL.
Okay.
He said if you want to have a real stable knee going forward, you have the surgery to repair it. He was saying that if he were consulted, and he's not someone who would be consulted by Ole Miss, he's outside, he said he would recommend at this point that you go ahead and do the surgery. Clean the knee up, do the surgery, that he would be plenty good to go in plenty of time to get ready for the 2018 season. I didn't ask about spring football because my stance on spring football for established players is pretty established.
Yeah, the PCL is the strongest ligament, I've been told, of the four in the
yes.
knee. And it doesn't really do much from a side-to-side agility standpoint. It's a straightforward thing that provides stability to the knee. That's all it does.
Yeah, he was saying if you're an elite athlete and you have the time to repair the knee, he would recommend repairing it.
You or I tear it, and it just is what it is.
That's exactly what he said. He said if you tore your knee, your PCL, I would tell you just to get off of it for a little while and see what happens.
Let the swelling go down.
But if you're a young athlete who aspires to play in the NFL, I'd fix it. He goes, you know, if you're out for the year and it's late October, fix it. You'll have plenty of time to get ready for the following season.
So, again, maybe more information today. I don't know. We'll see. The podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. Our underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're going to local underwriting that understands your market. Also, the leader in condo financing in Oxford. So, ask Jason about the float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can find him at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
We're also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been in Oxford for more than 26 years. It's an American standard dealer, but they'll work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Go to their websites, comerheatingandair.com. When you talk to them, tell them that you heard about Comer Heating and Air on the podcast. You get $20 off your service. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals. You can get a 1990s price on a 2017 vehicle at Grenada Nissan on a lease. It's Grenada Nissan USA. .com. We're also brought to you by the Oxford Park Commission. Our registration ongoing for youth basketball, ages 5 through 15. It's $50 per child. Go to their website, oxfordparkcommission.com. Boys and girls, 5 to 15. Games will be played Monday, Tuesday, Thursday nights, and Saturday mornings at the Oxford Rec Center.
Go ahead and jump into lines for the week. We all had a pretty good week last week. Jeffrey 5-0. Neil and I both missed a game. Mine was much more egregious than Neil's, given the current state of Neil's picks last week. But that's okay. It's.
I phoned one in last week, but I think I made a point in the process.
Yeah, I picked Kentucky. That was really good. That was smart.
I could see
4-1 in the really, really big black eye sitting there as I won the fight.
I could see the pick of Kentucky. It's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points.
Those are the games.
I thought they would score against State's secondary. That was all. I thought State was going to score and run all over them, but I thought Kentucky would score as well.
Those are just the games that Mississippi State wins. They win games against teams where they're the more physical team and that team's not uber talented. They win those games consistently. When they play teams that are uber talented, they lose those games consistently. But State, I'll give him this. This team for the last couple of years has a very, very basic
– they're not volatile.
DNA. And they stay in their lane really well.
Let's see. Florida State, 2-4, 2-5 now, in trouble of not reaching bowl eligibility. They go to Boston College this weekend. They're 8-point favorites. Probably going to win, although BC gets a little spunky at times. So that's just
BC will get spunky for them. It's one of those deals when you're Florida State and you're down. Everybody still wants payback.
On this podcast, way before the season, Bruce Feldman put out the list of 20 coaches to watch or whatever. Very high up that list was Philip Montgomery at Tulsa.
Yeah.
The Tulsa Golden Hurricane is 2-6 this season.
Well, I don't know what opportunities he had last year. He might not have had any, so this might not be applicable to him. If I'm ever an agent for a football coach and they're at a mid-major and they have a great year,
go.
We're out. We're out. You're not going to gamble on another great year.
Is the exception Scott Frost?
If I were advising Scott Frost, I would advise Scott Frost to take one of these big jobs that pay a gazillion dollars. If I were advising Scott Frost, and God knows I'm not, I would say let's have an auction. I'm in it for the money. If I'm a college football coach, I want as much money as I can get.
Don't you need to? Period. Don't you need a spot you can win too? Because then you get the second contract.
Yeah, but I can't gamble on UCF. Because so there's two schools of thought. You could say, all right, I got it going here. We're 6-0, 7-0, we're 16th, 18th, whatever.
Yeah, he thinks he's in a conference that he can just literally dominate every year. Yeah. And it is what he thinks he's Nick Saban for that conference.
I got it going on. I'm 18th, 17th, whatever they are in the country. We're going 11-1.
Kicking the crap out of people.
12-0. People are going to be talking about us in the playoff thingy. I'm going to get interviewed on these Wednesday night ESPN shows soon. We're about to be hot. We're going to get to go play in like the Fiesta Bowl or something. And we might win because we're going to play some team that's kind of like, whatever. And my kids are going to be sky high. And so what I'm thinking is, we win really big. I stay here. We do it again next year. Now Ohio State opens up or
whatever.
Whatever. Maybe Saban retires and Dabo takes that gig and Clemson opens up.
Yeah, I'm at Florida this time next year.
Yeah, a big elite top 10 job. Okay, I get that. And that's a better move than Tennessee, Ole Miss, Nebraska. But what if you fall off at Central Florida next year? What if the quarterback tears his ACL in week 2? Nobody's going to come down and promise you that he won't. What if you have 2 defensive linemen go down in week 1? What if your starting linebacker gets kicked off the team for a sexual assault? You got 85 kids. You can't control 85 kids. You know that could happen. If you're Scott Frost or someone like that, you know all those things could happen.
Be Tom Herman. Don't be Mark Hudspeth.
Exactly. You're hot. There's no reason to feel like you won't be hot, but there's no guarantee that you'll stay hot either. And if you're as good as you think you are, you can take Tennessee, Ole Miss, Nebraska.
And win.
Win big, and that won't stop you from taking the Ohio State gig in 5 years.
A couple other mid-major coaches at least being talked about around the country. Memphis, a 10-point favorite against Tulane this weekend.
See, he's the next best example. Mike Norvell, you got to go. You cannot gamble on Memphis.
Justin Fuente went.
He went. And Justin Fuente is at Virginia. He's a great example because Justin Fuente is at Virginia Tech, and he's got a great gig. But Justin Fuente could put his name out right now. I can tell you right now that if Alabama opened up, Justin Fuente could get in on that. Everything in history says Memphis is a volatile gig. This isn't me criticizing Memphis because they've now won a little bit here lately, but there's no guarantee there.
Most coaches have had a hit. A high spot.
Yeah.
I mean, back with Eli, I mean, they had D'Angelo Williams and Danny Wimprine and those guys.
Sure, they've done a nice job. I'm not saying that he couldn't stay at Memphis and win next year. But you're always kind of on the cliff a little bit there.
Then the little bigger version of Frank Wilson's Chad Morris. They both win, but they hadn't win huge. It's that middle kind of ground. Chad Morris playing Tulsa. Is playing Philip Montgomery this weekend. SMU, an 8-point favorite against the Golden Hurricane.
You mentioned Frank Wilson. I shouldn't do this because if he gets the job, this will be used against me. But the reality is whoever gets this job, there are going to be people who very, very vocally go against me within 2 days, so it won't matter. What's Frank Wilson done that's making him such a hot candidate? What is it specifically?
He's a great recruiting reputation. At multiple schools.
Right.
At multiple schools.
But who at Ole Miss did he actually recruit?
I meant to look this up, and I didn't. It probably would be a better topic for tomorrow because, frankly, I'm not prepared for it. It's been 10 years.
The one thing I'll say about Orgeron and his staff when they were at Ole Miss, yeah, they recruited some good players. Michael Orr.
He was with Orgeron the entire time. He was at Ole Miss 05 to 07. Then he went to Southern, actually, for a year. And then he did Tennessee at 9. And then
he was on Lane Kiffin's staff.
Yeah, and then he was with Orgeron. And then he was very good at LSU from 10 to 15 as a recruiting coordinator and basically assistant head coach with the Tigers.
But recruiting Louisiana kids to LSU is not the same as recruiting Louisiana kids to Ole Miss or Tennessee. Or whatnot.
I was thinking about this on Saturday night. You and I were on the phone leaving the stadium, which might have been Orgeron. If I'm forgetting one, feel free to tell me, podcast land. I don't think apples to apples, as in position to position, playing the same opportunity, Orgeron ever took a kid out of Louisiana with a true LSU offer. I don't think so. Brandon Bolden and Kentrell Lockett were kind of different cases.
Lockett's next best offer was Mike Shula's Alabama.
Yeah.
They wanted him. Brandon Bolden, if I recall correctly, and I wasn't covering Ole Miss at the time.
They wanted him to play linebacker.
They wanted him to play linebacker, and he wanted to play running back.
Yeah.
Which means they were slow playing him.
I think the biggest win Ole Miss had over LSU from a recruiting standpoint during that period was Marcus Tillman.
From what I've heard.
He was the defensive end at, I think, Franklin County, if I'm remembering that correctly.
I think that's basically right. I think that's true. I think he was the biggest win. LSU wanted him badly at the same position.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going back. Just people revise history. Boy, he left him. Like, they got the running back for the Patriots with all the hype. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. But he was a transfer. They got Kendrick Lewis, and he was a Louisiana kid. But Kendrick Lewis had moved to Atlanta. The Hurricane had displaced him, if I recall correctly. Those are wins. But if the line of thinking...
They had more evaluation wins than they did recruiting wins. Dexter McCluster, Greg Hardy.
Right.
Those dudes. To his credit, he was a transfer, but to Orgeron's credit, Frank Wilson's credit, they got Jevon Snead.
Yes.
From Texas.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not belittling the job they
did. No, just
did.
Keeping it in a context.
I'm trying to say, though, that there's a lot. There was a lot of luster, if I remember from following it from the outside, to Ole Miss's pursuit of Keelan Williams, Joe McKnight, legendary Louisiana players that Ole Miss finished second or third on.
Yeah.
Well, second or third in recruiting is meaningless. It's meaningless.
I've said this publicly and privately multiple times. What Ed Orgeron did, and frankly, we probably should be thanking him, is made Ole Miss people care about recruiting. The pursuit of recruiting.
Yes.
That hey, it's not. It's another season. Cutcliffe never was able to do that. Now look, Orgeron also the internet. You know, a lot of different reasons behind this. However, he got Ole Miss in those conversations. He made Ole Miss people care about using this. You know, hyperbolically, the drug that is recruiting.
Yes.
You know, let's get up and get our hit in the morning.
Sure, I know what you mean.
So that's what Orgeron did.
Yeah.
He won a little bit as far as on the recruiting. He got a couple wins here and there, but it wasn't going into LSU and taking a dude, that kind of thing.
So much of the Hugh Freeze love affair early was Wesley McGriff's quote about this: my boss is an elephant hunter. We're going after the big guys. It's that, all of that stuff.
I think Frank is volatile to me as a head coach at this level at this time. You can put forth the persuasive argument that makes me go, okay. But then I've also got some thoughts in my head of, what have we seen? Because look, they weren't world beaters. I don't want to go too crazy on the other side here. But he inherited a pretty good program from Larry Coker at Texas San Antonio.
Yeah.
They at least Coker was the one that got them from the ashes to where they were just an abomination of a program. They're okay.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not great. It's not awful. It is what it is. But he went 6-7 last year, and I think he's 4-2 right now. Fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fine.
It's not a shot at Frank Wilson. Doing a nice job at San Antonio. But given what he's dealing with, where what the new coach would be dealing with at Ole Miss, if I'm Ross Bjork, and I'm certainly not, I would like a track record. That's it.
Oh, if possible.
And we've talked about this. We've made it podcast headlines. I think coach development and evaluation is more important than being slick in the living room right now.
And the whole, well, he's recruited here before. I don't care. That's immaterial to me if I'm Ross Bjork. Give me somebody who knows how to do this job. What is the difference, frankly, between being the coach at Michigan State to being the coach at Ole Miss? What's the difference? Coaching is coaching, right?
For the most part, yeah.
I mean, you run a program. It's 11 on 11.
It is.
You got academic stuff. You have compliance stuff. You have to manage a staff. You have to manage a support staff. You have to know how to delegate. You have to have PR skills. You have to have some marketing skills. Those are skills that could transfer from, I'm trying to use schools that aren't in the market. The job James Franklin does at Penn State from a day-to-day basis, is it really that much different than what he did at Vanderbilt?
That's easier, but...
But the job duties themselves, they're basically the same, right? You just wear a different shirt.
Almost every Power 5 school has essentially the same responsibility.
So if you're Scott Frost, the job Scott Frost does at Tennessee, Nebraska, wherever, is day-to-day no different than the job that he does at Central Florida. Go and drive to a different office and wear a different color polo. But the job is the same.
Yeah, Frank Wilson is a great recruiter. When he was at LSU, it was the perfect combination of really good recruiter and great school to be recruiting to for him with his Louisiana roots and background.
He was sure.
He was named National Recruiter of the Year 3 different times, I think. LSU has the second most NFL draft picks during Wilson's time other than Alabama. I mean, I get all that. All that's true. That's not wrong. He's done a great job at San Antonio recruiting relative to what they had ever done. They never finished over 103rd in the recruiting rankings. They finished 69th last year. That's an improvement. It's not about Frank Wilson. It's about the volatility of a potential Frank Wilson administration. And I don't know. It's just – it's not a sure thing is my point.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I don't – there is a sure thing. But Wilson's deal is – and I'm using him as – I feel like I'm picking on him, and I'm not. It so much of the sex –
we could be having some of the I saw yesterday somebody – I don't remember who it was, so I'm not criticizing because it might be one of my buddies in the media. I don't remember. They said Arkansas should go get Chad Morris – because he can recruit Texas. It's like,
yeah.
Let's stop focusing on one thing for any coach anywhere.
It's. I criticized this on our board yesterday. Someone goes, we should get the guy that helps us keep Shea Patterson. No, you should get the guy that runs the best program. You should get the guy that has you positioned to be nationally competitive in 2021. You shouldn't be focused on that's losing the forest for the trees. The great philosopher Andy Kennedy always says, you are what your numbers say you are. Ole Miss's numbers say that there's a complete rebuild that's necessary on defense from a personnel standpoint. There are going to be recruiting sanctions. This is not going to be a one-year rebuild. This isn't going to be put a Band-Aid on something. This is going to require a surgery and a recovery and a rehab.
What's best case?
In 3 years, you're really competitive.
That's what I'm saying. Define really competitive.
Competing to play in a January 1 bowl.
Okay.
Getting to that level where you're on that level. That's 3 years. Is it would be quick. 3 years would be meteoric. I don't see how you could make this particular team, one that went 5-7 a year ago, is probably going somewhere around 5-7, 4-8 this year. I don't see how you can expect that next season that team's going 8-4, 9-3. Now, there will be people who will predict it, but it's not realistic.
That's what I was trying to think in my head. Who they lose, who's back. I mean, linebacker is so bad right now.
And they lose the best one they have.
That – The Pollyanna hope would be these freshmen are actually good and next year as sophomores they play and play well.
Yes.
If you want a Pollyanna path, that's the path.
Yes.
Because I do think they're okay at corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Safety's hit or miss. Zedrick's been good.
He's been good. The rest of it been pretty shaky.
Mm-hmm. And then offensively, they lose Jordan Wilkins, who's run like a son of a gun the last few weeks.
And there's no replacement behind him that I go, that dude's proven.
I've seen flashes from Sweeney. I haven't seen consistency, and frankly, they haven't given him a lot of carry, so I hadn't seen much at all. Sample size.
Yeah, which is not – yeah, people go, well, Sweeney hadn't gotten a chance. Listen to what we're saying.
It's fair, yeah.
Listen to what we're saying. He might go be a 1,000-yard rusher.
We hadn't seen him.
But if you're doing that on projection. You're not doing that on what you've seen. You're not basing that on any empirical data at all. Going to be athletic at receiver. And assuming that Patterson's there, you're going to have an athletic, experienced quarterback.
Yeah, of course. The offensive line should be okay.
Offensive line should be okay. Should be, frankly, a strength.
Yeah.
There's no sign at all that you're going to be an elite running team. And there's no sign at all that you're going to be any better against the run next year than you are now. And so, throw in recruiting sanctions and stuff. You can't address all of your needs. Throw in the fact that this appears to be almost a lost recruiting year. It's very difficult.
To me, that's the bigger deal even than the sanctions. Because look, the sanctions are important. Every lost scholarship is a lost scholarship. That's one less guy you can put out there and hope he plays well.
Reduces, so it matters. Reduces your margin for error each
Now,
one.
You can be, if you're really, really efficient, you can at least mitigate a two or three scholarship loss. That's really not the end of the world.
No, of course not.
However, this lost class is the problem.
It's another lost class.
Because that's the thing, is they to win in this league, and Ole Miss people have found this out as well as anyone, it's not about one top five, top eight class. It's about how many you're stringing together. How many you putting together. How many are you piling on top of each other. And this is a group that
– you need to string three together.
Yeah, and this class is not going to be a top anything class. It has been devastated by the NCAA situation.
That's why I've said I think this gets worse before it gets better, and I do. And well, I know that's not
I guess
popular.
Kind of what I'm saying is it's possible the way this class thing's working out, it gets a little better, then takes a dip and has to come back.
Yes.
Because this class is the one that's eventually going to be juniors.
Yes.
This is all so hyperbolic. I mean, not hypothetical. Sorry,
not
hyperbolic. Not
all that hypothetical.
No.
I mean, you have 2018, that 16 class will be juniors. 2019, yeah. They'll be seniors.
Some will be gone.
And then you get into 2020, and the 17 class and the 18 class are supposed to be your upperclassmen, and those are bad classes. Those are classes that were impacted dramatically by NCAA, by the presence of an NCAA investigation, by the presence of NOAs. So whoever takes this job, he has to be assured, hey, that 2020 season, which could be a real stinker, that's not going to get held against me. It's got to be someone with – it's why you have to have somebody who has vision. I got to have – I'm hiring somebody who has a long-term plan. I'm hiring somebody who is a Theo Epstein, the Houston guys, Jeff Luno. I'm hiring somebody who can, in his mind, look 6 years down the road. Here's how we're going to do this. This is a, as everyone likes to use the word, journey.
And in the meantime, needs to be a really good evaluator and a really good developer. So while you're waiting on that, because look, we're talking about January 1. We're talking about being relevant on a scale here.
Talk about being an 8-4, 9-3 consistent.
In the meantime,
program.
Develop and evaluate enough to get to 6.
Yeah.
Be around where the fans, because. Especially today with the whole, discretionary spending issue that college athletics is having from a fan standpoint. Be good enough to where when they show up, they kind of like to watch the team and there's a decent chance you even might win. Not to win them all, but be around to be able to win occasionally.
No, and it's a, people, it's, Ross has his work cut out for him. I mean, this isn't going to be an easy sell. Not necessarily a hard sell. Because there's a lot to offer. But, and I would frankly be terrified of any candidate who just said, yeah, I want it. I'll take it. I'm in. No questions. I'm in. Wait, what? You don't have questions? You better have a lot. That would almost be a disqualification for me. No, I want the Ole Miss job so bad that I'm not even going to evaluate the weaknesses. No, I want somebody who's looking at it going, okay, now, what are we going to do about this? And what are we going to do about this? And about this? Because we're going to hit this roadblock. When we do, how are we? Here's my plan. I want somebody with a detailed plan. Not just some emotion. Not just. Oh man, God, that's a great job. I grew up following that. I'm not. Emotion's not going to last for 5 years. You got to have a plan. You got to have a way you're going to do it that is unique. That can survive adversity. you're going to have to. It's like the guy at Baylor. He told them, "Hey, we're going to run into some roadblocks, lots of them. This is going to be a test." I always say this about rebuilds. Rebuilds like Callaway, we're going to get to him in a minute. Congratulations to him, by the way, on getting that gig. That gig in New York is going to require, in a major market where people want to win so bad they don't know what to do, it just might require stripping it down some first.
Mm-hmm. Rebuilds suck.
Rebuilds are really emotional things. Because included in rebuilds is getting your ass kicked and trying to take positives from it. Keeping fans excited during a rebuild is
keeping them in the stadium.
It's hard, very hard.
Yeah. Podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Remember, you can get landscape, lighting, irrigation, installation, maintenance, and turf installation. They do holiday lighting for the holiday season as we're getting close to that by the day. Get a free quote, 662-607-7773 or mastercutslawn.com. And when you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is free.
Full disclosure, my computer is completely crashed. I don't have my ad notes in front of me. So some of the ads aren't as detailed. I apologize to the advertisers. We'll make up for it. We're brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's deposits and things go right back into the Oxford community. All the bells and whistles that you get at the big mega banks, you get it at OUB, but you get it with personal service. There's no 5-minute wait, no 10 buttons to press. You get a live person right off the bat who can help you with all of your banking needs. It's Bank Live Oxford, bankoxford.com to learn more. Live Oxford, bankoxford.com, 662-234-6668. We are also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, Michael's your guy. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's the largest dealer of land in our state. Go to his Facebook page. Send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. If you're in the market to buy or sell hunting land, recreational land, if you think you might be in the market, if you think it might be in your future, get in touch with Michael. He'll come see you. He will do what it takes. He'll put his money where his mouth is to market your product and get it sold. Again, that's michael@tomsmithland.com.
Back to lines in a second. Run through a bunch of mid-major games. Now getting to anything with relevance again. Ole Miss, Arkansas, as of this moment, not on the board.
It popped up at one point yesterday as a pick'em.
Well, there was I think the system was screwed up. There were like 40 pick'ems on the page, and there was no way. They had Oklahoma, Texas Tech as a pick'em at that moment. I would like Oklahoma to have jumped on that. So, no. Well,
Oklahoma's so weird that would be a scary pick'em right now. Look. It's Jordan Tamu versus either a backup
or an injured Austin Allen
or an ineffective gimpy Austin Allen.
Also with Jordan Tamu, that little tape out on him, and now they prepare for him. It wasn't just to prepare for Shea Patterson and then we'll figure out the backup when he comes in, whatever it is. Because you can't make a lot of wholesale changes during the game for the quarterback.
Now you have some tape on him. Not much, but they'll go get New Mexico military tape.
Yeah.
Because Brett Bielema is coaching for his job right now.
No doubt about that. So.
Although Brett Bielema's name popping up at Nebraska.
Won't work.
Well, if you're Brett Bielema, you take it.
Won't work.
Probably not.
Won't work.
I don't know that Nebraska's a great job. I'm on that thing for 2 weeks now.
Oklahoma State, -6 at West Virginia, has a chance to be a fun little game on Saturday.
Hard to win in Morgantown.
It's kind of fun. You mentioned Baylor a little while ago. Texas, -10 against the Bears in Waco this weekend.
And here's another. Yeah. Ole Miss is going to hire somebody, and everyone's going to fall in love because that's what you do. Texas said, "Hey, we got Tom Herman. We're back." Nope, not where it is. There's no quick fix. Can't call Tom Herman a failure after 1 year, but it's also living proof that there is no miracle drug.
Coaches that did get out at the right time, however, not going so well this year, that would be Larry Fedora and the North Carolina Tar Heels. They are currently 1-7 on the season.
Mitchell Trubisky must be pretty good.
Well, and Brandon Harris is not good.
Yeah.
They thought Brandon Harris would be the graduate transfer savior, and it has not worked out for the Tar Heels.
As a rule, when a program lets a kid go, there's a reason.
Especially at a program where they're really good everywhere but quarterback.
Yeah, they let a quarterback go.
Miami playing North Carolina this weekend, 20.5 for the Hurricanes in Chapel Hill.
Mark Richt's done a great job.
Looking at a schedule here on Google, North Carolina going 2-10 most likely this season, if I look at it correctly.
Yeah.
They're going to beat Western Carolina, and that's going to be it. Virginia Tech beat them 59-7 Saturday.
Yeah, they're not good. It's a fickle business.
Jim Harbaugh in trouble?
Trouble? No. Is the star completely lost its luster?
Gone.
It's gone. It's not cute anymore.
He picked a bad season to start a podcast.
Yeah. Don't show me the guy with the gimmick. I don't want gimmicks. That stupid cap everywhere he goes.
Khakis.
Come on, man. Gimmicks don't win. Systems win. Franklin's got a system.
Maybe the second best team in the country right now. Give or take your thoughts on Georgia.
Might be the second best coach in the country right now. Won at Vanderbilt.
He did. 9 wins. Multiple times.
People don't win at Vanderbilt. He did. If it's not him, who is it? If it's not James Franklin, who's the second best coach in the country?
I mean, I'm having a hard time just erasing Urban Meyer from my memory.
That's fair.
But he's in the next group.
Yeah.
I'm Saban Meyer 1-2, and you're going to have a hard time getting in that group for me.
Okay. Then if Franklin's
But
not,
I have a next tier where he's
Franklin's
in that tier.
If Franklin's not third, who is?
Well, I mean, you could have argued prior to this season, frankly. And even then, the quarterback. I mean, Jimbo Fisher's got to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
I get he's having a bad year, but he's in there.
So does Dabo.
Yeah, Dabo's in the conversation.
Yeah.
It's that tier. It's that four dudes.
I just look at Franklin, who went to Penn State and has systematically made them better. I mean, it's like night and day. And he's done it incrementally.
Let's see. A game that Mike McIntyre desperately needs this week. They play Cal in Boulder, Colorado -3 against the Bears.
I meant to watch the Washington State game when I got home the other night and didn't. What was the final?
Washington State won, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, but I did not catch it.
You ask Siri?
I mean, I can look it up, okay, too. No, I actually – there was live golf on because they were in South Korea, so I was watching golf. I stayed up to watch the playoff, and the Golf Channel lost the feed during the second playoff hole.
I poured a glass of wine and sat in the dark.
28-0, Washington State over Colorado.
I hear Mike McIntyre's name for Ole Miss a lot from people in the coaching world. Heard it a lot Saturday.
Fun game maybe in South Bend. Notre Dame -7.5 against NC State Saturday.
Oh, that's a really good game.
Somehow,
I like NC State.
As much as I hate to admit this, because I love the overrated part of Notre Dame every year being ranked, they're underrated right now.
Yeah. So is
Notre
NC
Dame's
State.
Underrated.
NC State is still paying the perception.
The South Carolina loss.
Penalty for losing to South Carolina. Since then, they've been really good. That's a great game. What time is that game?
2:30.
Yeah.
2:30.
Might see some of it.
Also at 2:30, huge game. Don't have to win it, but big game for a program doing well. Matt Campbell and Iowa State hosting TCU Saturday.
Oh, that's intriguing.
It's kind of fun. It's okay there.
If you're Matt Campbell, you got to get out, right?
Oh, get the heck out of here.
Got to get out, right?
Yeah. Got to get out of there. Georgia and Florida this weekend.
How old's Matt Campbell?
Not old. He was at Toledo for a little while, but that was pretty much it.
He'd be on my short list. Real short list.
Georgia, Florida, cocktail party this weekend. The
big game for Jim McElwain.
It is. The Georgia Bulldogs are favored by 14.5.
Whew, that's a lot of points in that game. You ever been to that game?
I have not been to that game.
That's an interesting deal because it's half and half.
It's the SEC's version of the Red River Rivalry.
Yeah. And weird things kind of happen in that game. It's a big game for both schools.
It opened at 13. It's at 14.5 now.
I mean, Georgia's significantly better than Florida. McElwain needs to win. Not win. He needs to be really competitive. He does not need a 27-point loss Saturday.
I'm a little bothered that we have all these games at 2:30. The scheduling czar sucks in college football.
We'll be done by 4:30. We'll see second halves.
In Columbus, Ohio this weekend, your Penn State Nittany Lions.
Oh, I know. That's what I loved about Penn State the other day, Franklin.
Ohio State -7 against Penn State. Penn State getting 7 points.
Franklin, when they beat Michigan, said, we're going to celebrate this for 1 hour. We're going to celebrate it for 1 hour, and then we're turning the page. Told his players that. They have an hour.
Neil's Big Ten game of the week is the Michigan State Spartans -1 at Northwestern this week for your game of the week.
Yeah, Northwestern had a big win Saturday. I can't remember who they played, but I know they won.
Iowa?
Sounds right.
Because I made fun of you last week for that being the game you would watch.
It was Iowa.
Yeah.
It was Iowa because it was in Evanston and they won.
Had a rough day yesterday, but just getting there, being a quarterback. Congratulations to C.J. Beathard. Watched him playing for the 49ers yesterday.
Sure.
Good kid.
Great kid.
It worked out for everybody. Ole Miss needed Bo Wallace, not C.J. Beathard. C.J. Beathard had a great career at Iowa. Worked out for everybody.
Yeah, he had a great career.
Yeah.
And is in the NFL. Good for him.
UCLA, by the way, the only Power 5 team to allow more rushing yards this season than Ole Miss. They are 17.5-point underdogs at Washington on Saturday. Just running through this. Vanderbilt at South Carolina this weekend. South Carolina -7.
That's it?
That's it.
I'm locked in on that.
You want in on that?
Yeah, I'm locking that.
It's gone down 0.5. It was 7.5. Now it's 7. So, we'll see. Vanderbilt, South Carolina there. As we move through, Neil's Louisiana Monroe Warhawks getting 1.5 against Idaho this weekend. An Idaho team that could not stop Missouri from doing anything. Missouri scored 68, 70 points, whatever it was. Completely had that thing covered. We were all focused on that -15 line for Missouri against Idaho. The first half line was only -7. They covered that thing overly comfortable. So, Idaho, Louisiana Monroe there, kind of a strange game at that level. Speaking of Missouri, at UConn this weekend, Missouri -12.5 against the UConn Huskies. UConn not good at all, doesn't play very good defense. That feels like a laying again because we say it every week, but it's become absolutely prophetic. Drew Locke, really good against bad teams, really bad against good teams, and UConn's not a good football program. So Drew Locke probably going to have a big day. Missouri only -12.5 at UConn on Saturday.
I think they'll cover that easily. It's going to be interesting as we get close to the bowls. There are going to be all these bowls with 6-6 versus 6-6. And everybody's going to say, well, it's college football. I get it. But, man, some of those games are going to be unwatchable. Missouri has how many wins right now? Like 4?
I don't know.
I mean, they, you know.
Have they won an SEC game? They got to win 2.
I don't think so.
And also, they got to win 3. They lost to Purdue. They can't win 3.
No, they can't win 3.
Texas A&M hosting a huge game this weekend against the Mississippi State Bulldogs.
That is a big game. What's that line? 5?
2. No, I'm sorry. It's down to pick 'em.
Really?
A&M open -2. It's gone down to pick 'em.
In College Station?
In College Station.
Wow.
All you got to do is pick the winner.
Everything in me says Texas A&M wins that game.
Yeah. I'm taking A&M.
Yeah. That would be a really big win for State.
Even beyond the debacle that was Alabama on Saturday, Tennessee, this might be the worst piece of evidence as far as Butch Jones should be fired. They're in Kentucky this weekend, a Kentucky team that lost 45-7 to Mississippi State.
Yep.
The Kentucky Wildcats are favored by 6 points.
Wow. Tennessee can't score against anyone. If I'm Tennessee, I don't fire Butch Jones until the season's over. I don't do some interim deal where somebody accidentally revitalizes my program in a month.
When the schedule softens, too. They beat Kentucky and Vanderbilt, and somebody gets giddy.
Well, you know, fans are. That's what fans do. This is emotional to them, and I'm not criticizing it. But if you're an administrator, you don't want that emotion riding on somebody. Just ride this thing out.
Oklahoma minus 21 is the real line against Texas Tech this weekend in Norman.
Yeah, they're a good team. They're schizophrenic. Oklahoma's problem nationally is that they just can't. They're not good defensively.
Washington State on the road at Arizona this weekend. Mike Leach's group is 5-point favorites against the Wildcats.
He's going to take them to a 10-2 year.
Yeah, going to have a big year. That Cal game still amazes me, but
it does me too. Anyway. Justin Wilcox has done a good job there.
He has. Well, I'll transition in a second to another sport. We'll do that. The podcast brought to you by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. They've got Sildenafil. It's a $10 version of that $50 or $60 little blue pill. It has the same length of effectiveness and is ready as little as 15 minutes. You can tear it into quarters, halves, or take the entire pill if you would like. 662-252-2321. Or when you go to Tyson Drugs, fill out the form, give them your doctor's name. They'll get the prescription ready. And they'll even deliver it to you if you're not local. So 662-252-2321.
We're also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Get in touch with Ben Brown. It's Ben at JourneyBizSolutions.com. Ben at JourneyBizSolutions.com. He can make sure that your business doesn't lose a customer. They've got all sorts of offers. Get in touch with him. Ben at JourneyBizSolutions.com. We're brought to you by Romero Miller State Farm. You can get in touch with Romero at Romero@RomeroMillerStateFarm. He's on Facebook at Romero Miller State Farm. He can sell business. He can sell insurance, I should say, in Mississippi or Tennessee. Romero has been a friend of our program, of our site for a long time. Get in touch with him if you have insurance needs at Romero Miller State Farm. It's on Hacks Cross Road in Olive Branch.
So, as you mentioned a second ago, Mickey Callaway, the next manager of the New York Mets, supposed to have a press conference later today to announce that. I talked to David DeLucci yesterday about it. I talked to Don Kessinger. Story up at rebelgrove.com. Pitching coach 5 years. Really been a pretty quick ascent as far as he's only 42 years old, I think. Yeah. And coached in the minor leagues for a couple years. Then Terry Francona brings him in Cleveland. And
only head coaching experience is at Texas A&M, like international or something.
Yeah. Some small school. So,
or just part of a season.
Now the manager for the Mets. The Mets also interviewed Manny Acta, the Mariners third base coach, Joe McEwing, who's the White Sox bench coach, and Kevin Long, the Mets hitting coach. They also interviewed Alex Cora, although he's been named the Red Sox manager. I don't know what both sides of that was, who hired who first, but they both
– The Red Sox hired Cora first. Cora was a coveted guy. He makes a lot of sense in Boston. In much the same way that Callaway makes a lot of sense in New York because of the Mets and some of those pitchers and that
the
kind of
thing. The injury issues they've had where he's kept the Indians healthy and he's also – put very stable environments in for guys like Trevor Bauer that desperately needed it. So it seems to be a good fit for both people. Callaway obviously will deal with media scrutiny like he's never seen.
He's going to have a level of support from Mets ownership that Terry Collins never had. They're going to have to get behind him. They're going to have to be much better. The Mets have been awful at public relations.
The Indians under Callaway led Major League Baseball in ERA, strikeouts, shutouts, and complete games this season.
He did a great job the last several years there.
Yeah, so he played at Ole Miss from 94 to 96 under Don Kessinger. Kessinger was telling me yesterday that the first time he saw him, he went to a game in Germantown. They were playing Tupelo, and it was Mickey Callaway versus Kirk Pressley. Kirk Pressley from Tupelo, the eighth overall pick in the 93 draft.
I remember him.
Had a bunch of arm injuries, never really panned out, but a heck of a high school player. Said that he still talks to him a good bit. He said they had a couple conversations after the World Series last year because as much as he was a Cubs guy, felt for Mickey during his loss, obviously, in the World Series. However, he does have a World Series ring. He was on that 2002 Angels team that won the World Series. He was their fifth starter down the stretch when Aaron Seeley got hurt. So he was on the Angels team, has a ring. He comes back to Oxford a pretty good bit, football games and different things once the season's over. But Mickey Callaway, new manager of the New York Mets. Again, press conference later today, but it's been all over the place for the last day or so. Really good column in – let me see if I still have this up, and I don't. I think it was the New York Post. Talking about how obviously it can work. It's worked for Dave Roberts with the Dodgers. Didn't work for Robin Ventura with the White Sox. But, you know, younger guys without much experience. And just how different that seat is. And he wasn't criticizing Callaway, but he was talking about how you never know no matter who you hire. Sometimes it works, yes. Doesn't it? There's no it's much like a head football coach.
It's exactly like
there's a head football coach. System that just automatically works. And his example was he said that the 99 Yankees that won 98 games were better than the 98 Yankees that won 114 or 108 or whatever it was they won that year. The two differences were they had won so many and realized that was a hindrance and not necessary the next year. And the second one was that Joe Torre missed about 6 weeks early in that season with health issues. Don Zimmer takes over as manager, a guy that had been beside Torre, had managed tons of games, would seem to be the ideal candidate to hold things together.
Mm-hmm.
And as the new guy in the New York Post said, almost ruined a dynasty in 6 weeks. Was awful.
Yeah.
And he said when, you know, Callaway's been right next to Terry Francona, he's done all these decisions for so many years, but you just never know.
You don't know. He's learned from an absolute great. Francona's one of the greats. People questioning Francona based on this five-game, the series loss to the Yankees. Stop. It's a postseason series. It's one of the reasons I'm a little surprised no one's hired Davey Martinez away from Chicago. He's been with Joe Maddon in both Tampa and Chicago. But there is no guarantee. Talk about the Ole Miss thing. There's nobody out there that Ross Bjork can get who is guaranteed to succeed. No one. No one. That's not a knock on Ross.
There's no blueprint.
There is absolutely, I mean, outside of Nick Saban, and I guess Urban Meyer, and at this point I would say James Franklin, there's no one you're getting who when they walk in the door, you go, whew, all right, got that taken care of.
Moving on. Next thing.
Yep. Football's set. Nope. Nobody. You can get Scott Frost, Matt Campbell. Feel pretty good about it. Those kind of guys. I mean, hey, you won at Toledo. You won at Iowa State. You can win at Ole Miss. But there's no certainty.
Last thing, some teams across the country yesterday had those hurricane relief games, donating profits or money to hurricane relief. Kansas played Missouri yesterday.
Yeah. At the Sprint Center, right, Kansas City?
Those two programs are not fond of one another.
Mm-mm.
Even a little bit.
Yep.
Missouri, definitely the little brother in the group.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of hate both ways. All I kept seeing was both teams are going to take this way too seriously and someone's going to get hurt in an exhibition.
Felt like that.
They didn't. It was ended up being a great environment, and it was a fairly close game, I think.
Yeah.
But cool and scary all at the same time. State lost to Nebraska yesterday in a very similar one in Starkville, by the way.
A little surprised that Ole Miss and Southern Miss didn't come up with some sort of way to
do that instead,
raise some money.
Frank Fischilla estimates that Michael Porter will average 20 points a game this season.
He scores. Guy scores in his sleep.
They also got a huge game from Jeremiah Tillman, another freshman.
Yeah. Missouri's going to be a good team. A lot of people think they're going to be a tournament team.
Fun game. Yeah. Ole Miss and Southern could have done something to...
He could have done something. Might not have been worth the trouble.
Kansas, who was ranked number 3 this season, 93-87 winners over the Tigers.
They played a 40-minute game.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Which, I'll tell you why Andy and the coach at Southern Miss probably don't want to do that, is that you don't – a lot of times what you want to do in those deals is not just play a game.
You want to situations,
able,
testing.
Yeah, you want to be able to go, hey, let's put 6 minutes on the clock.
Yeah. Let's play this out.
Yeah. I'm going to get these guys out. Let me do something here.
Yeah, you're up four. There's 4.5 to go.
I know this guy's in foul trouble, but I really need to get him in these late-minute deals. I'm going to put him back in.
Okay.
Freeze you up to do some things and not have a game.
And have an attendant staring at you going, well, it's like.
Yeah, where people are hot takes.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it.
So, you know, that might be a lot of that. You want to, hey, I've been looking at this lineup with 3 guards. I want to do it right now. I want to play the 3-guard deal for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then with the Southern Miss guy goes, okay, when you get through with that, we want to do a double big thing. Will you put your 2 bigs in? Yeah, yeah, we'll do that. You work on some stuff. Each.
Yeah.
You get the stuff that you want to structure, and he gets the stuff he wants to structure, and at the end of the day, you shake hands, wish each other well, and say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we met up in the tournament and we do this in a real deal?
Yeah.
See ya. Have fun.
Holler at me.
Yeah. Be good. Good luck.
Yeah.
As opposed to a 40-minute deal where you're playing a game.
2 fan bases are dying on every shot of a game.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then somebody gets hurt. I'm probably more for the more structured.
Yeah.
Because you get to do the run-through against, I can't remember who Ole Miss plays.
UNA, right?
Yeah, it used to be like athletes in action or whatever.
Right.
And you'd play those people. And that was your dress rehearsal. And that's where you do a clock and you have a timeout every 4 minutes and blah, blah, blah. That's fine.
Yeah. Team loses an exhibition every once in a while and everybody freaks out and that team ends up in the Sweet 16 in 4 months. And it's
Kentucky lost to athletes in action. We're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did notice that he played the end of the bench 13 minutes, right? I mean, you get that.
He had combinations out there that had never played before. So
yeah, it was totally experimental.
Yeah.
See, I love the first week hot takes out of the NBA. Come on, man, stop.
So the Thunder aren't screwed at 1-2? They're going to be
I'll
okay?
I'll tell you what, that was as good an October NBA game as you'll ever see. No, the Thunder's fine. The Timberwolves are good.
Andrew Wiggins hits a shot at the buzzer last night.
Yeah, he banked in a 40-footer. It counts.
It went in.
It was a great game.
Saints 4-2.
Well, we talked about this.
Yeah, a little spunky over the Packers. Now, look, the Packers suck without Aaron Rodgers, but it's a win.
Saints have a chance.
I think the Saints might be good. Their defense is getting better. They're leading the NFC South right now. Everybody else in the division lost yesterday.
No, the defense is getting a lot better. If you didn't listen to Larry Holder on the Beer Garden,
yeah,
he talked about how their defensive numbers are skewed by the first 2 weeks where they were horrible.
The other team, speaking of family, Dillon's Rams are good.
Yes.
I know Arizona's not great, but they beat the crap out of Arizona yesterday.
Well, they're better at the quarterback position than they've been in a long time.
5-2 and 133-0.
Goff's good. And defensively, they're really good.
Front 7 is, yeah.
Let me tell you who's really bad.
Todd Gurley's good, too.
The San Francisco 49ers
are not good at football.
Are aggressively bad to the point that
the Miami Dolphins under Adam Gase, 13-4 in their last 17 regular season games.
Yeah. Good coach.
2 touchdown comeback against the Jets yesterday. Didn't play well. Cutler got knocked out. He's not good, but they're managing.
Yeah. Who came in and played?
Matt Moore, their backup. They always play when something
happens. Solid backup.
Yeah, he's fine. Been around a little bit. He can get things done enough. I mean, you know, GM's obviously pretty good there. Gase is good. I mean, made decisions like not letting marijuana affect draft picks last year.
Laramie Tunsil was the best player on the board, so they took him. Makes sense.
Joe Thomas's snap streak stopped yesterday.
Saw that.
10,363.
If you're Cleveland, you got your money's worth out of that deal.
It's a good pick back in the day.
That's a good pick.
You suck at quarterbacks.
It was a Phil Savage pick.
Was it a Phil Savage pick? Mm-hmm. Yeah, worked out. All right, podcast tomorrow. We'll have some guests as the week moves forward. And again, check the site at rebelgrove.com as we will have plenty of coverage. Today, Matt Luke, Weston McGriff, Phil Longo, and a lot of stuff over the weekend. So if you haven't been by yet, go check it out. We'll talk to you soon.